Blog Talk Radio.
You're the mother of the earth.
from the mountain.
Everyone, welcome to Dry Bones Connection on Friday night. This is Antoinette, and tonight I have with me Miss Kim Weston, and the title of the show is Miss Kim Weston is Calling the Called and the Chosen, honoring the Delta, the Tuskegee Airmen. And Miss Kim Weston, Miss Kim, are you with me? Miss Kim? If you have yourself on mute, please take yourself off.
God bless. God bless you and family.
Well, thank you. And how's tonight we're honoring. Pardon me?
I was just saying, how's everybody doing? I hope everybody's well.
Oh, okay. Well, we're well. How are you?
I'm blessed. My phone went out just before time to call, and I'm hoping that Dodo. So the ability is on the mind.
Brother Billy, if you're on the mind, press 1, please.
You got it?
Right. Yep, I got him. Hello, Brother Billy.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, I'm one day away from being 96 years old.
That's a wonderful
happy birthday.
That's beautiful. Yes, happy birthday.
Thank you. God has blessed me.
Yes, he has. Yes, he truly has. And that is so wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that.
And
now,
Kim,
I
didn't know I was
going to
hear Raymond singing at the beginning of this program, but I loved it.
Well, that's true. See, that was a tribute to you from your brother.
Right, right.
Older, so
that's
he's acknowledged
that. That's the first time I've heard that. It sounds like Marvin and me.
That's
now,
his song. He wrote it.
That's Brother Ray. Miss Kim, I played that before.
First
maybe you weren't here
that.
When I played. Oh, no, he has a couple of them. He has an album, The Calvary.
Right.
Yeah. And he has one on there that I love, My Hero, or is it just Hero?
Oh.
Yeah.
Who do you think he's talking about that?
Pardon me? I think he's talking about his brother.
Uh-huh.
His big brother is his hero.
Yeah, I'm the big brother.
Yep.
He
and you're his hero.
I asked Willie to come because yesterday was Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day, and I wanted him to let the family know about that.
Yes.
Well, if you like, I'll tell you what I know about it.
Okay.
Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day is the fourth Thursday of every March from now on. Is Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day. The District of Columbia City Council has that date, as I said, forever. The legislature in Virginia has that date forever. And I think we finally got Maryland to do it the same way. I have not been involved because of my health, but Chief Killebrew and the people who work with the Congress, the legislature for each state in the District of Columbia area, that's the East Coast chapter of Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated. And so I think they may have gotten it done this time so that next year it will be automatic for Maryland, Virginia, and the District of Columbia.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if it was nationwide?
I am not sure. As I said, you need to talk to Mr. Killebrew and Eddie Hobinson, who they are the ones that are fronting this total program, and I'm so proud of these guys. They do work for us old fellas, and I'm an old fella to them, but I'm a young fella to the Tuskegee Airmen. I'm one of the babies in the bunch. But Ed Hobinson and Chief Killebrew, when the district passed this in the council, the city council, I was not able to go to the ceremony because I was ill. So my brother stood in for me, and he represented me as a DOTA. There was DOTA John Curry, who is a twin engine pilot. There was Ira out of Maryland. He is a DOTA, and a young man who I think is younger than I am, Johnson, is a twin engine pilot. He graduated after the war ended.
Oh, okay. Well, that's when you graduated also, isn't it?
No, I did not graduate. The war ended while I was in training. I had just finished basic flying, was the third of the four phases that you had to go through. And on November the 8th, 1945, I was discharged as an aviation cadet from Tuskegee. And members of my class, 45I, graduated, eight guys out of 50 of us that were left. Two of them were killed on the day that I left Tuskegee. They were flying formation, and they were twin engine pilots, so there were two of them in the plane together. And Otis Marshall and Spencer Isabel were killed in a crash. So they posthumously got their wings, but
I
said, eight of the guys, and we started out with 100, and eight of them stayed and graduated. I had a special situation, and I'll explain it to you. I had not finished high school
when
I went into service. And as a result of that, I thought the best thing for me to do was to go home, get my high school diploma, and then start taking care of myself, because I was one of eight children to my mother and father. I was the second born. And as a result of that, I did come back home, went back to work with my father. My father worked at the patent office, the United States Patent Office, for 45 years. And I worked there for 2 years, from the time I was 16 till I went into service at 18. And so I went back there and decided I'd better get my high school diploma. I did. I went to Howard University, School of Engineering and Architecture, and I met a lady in English. And I used to tease her. And I think she said, "I'm going to fix him. He keeps teasing me. I'm going to marry that turkey." And she did after we had courted for 2 years. And when I asked her to marry me, she said, "No.
Mm-mm.
I won't marry you until you get a job." So I quit Howard and went to work. And in 1949, June the 18th, Camilla Hall Bradford married William T. Fauntroy, Jr. And we were married for 61 years, 11 months, and 15 days when she passed. That's a love story that I like to tell.
Yes.
Talking about
and
blessing.
I'm sorry
That's
to hear about your wife passing. I remember Brother Ray was telling me about her, and I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I give you my condolences.
She was a wonderful person. She
and
made me. She made me a better person.
Well, that's good. That's truly, truly wonderful. That's a beautiful thing.
You know,
thing.
God has blessed me, as I tell everybody. We just lost Tuskegee Airman, who was 102 years old, General Charles McGee. And he took me like I was his brother or something, because at his funeral, they made me an honorary pallbearer, because I'm in a wheelchair, and I couldn't even go to the funeral. But to have somebody like that, like Charles McGee, who I went on several things for the Tuskegee Airmen with him, just makes me feel very proud to know someone like, just to know someone like that. And he is an inspiration. His daughter, for example, his youngest daughter, teaches young people to fly, to be air traffic controllers and mechanics. She has a program. That's the East Coast Chapter's program that our present president, Jerome Hodge that we did.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I better stop talking and let others talk.
No, we're listening to you. We're enjoying it. You're giving us history. This is a good thing. This is truly a good thing.
Yeah, okay, well,
but
I'd like to talk about...
Go ahead, I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, from your brothers and that were airmen, well, I'm sure you heard firsthand of the trials that they went through just to be able to fly, and then when they got over to Germany.
You know, and the thing that I'm very happy to talk about it, but the thing that I've always loved about the Tuskegee Airmen is that they came back, those that went overseas and fought and shot down planes and bombed, kept the bombers from being knocked down, they came back and taught us how to fly. My instructor, for example, Leonard Jackson, shot down three German planes.
Oh,
three.
Wow.
And he came back and taught me how to fly the AT-6. Cecil Ryan, who taught me to fly, was a civilian under Chief Anderson. And Chief Anderson was the pilot that took up Mrs. Roosevelt to show that Negroes could fly.
Yes.
Yeah,
they
see, those are
the
kind
Negro
of men that came before
it?
Me. Yeah,
yes.
They came before me and they taught me. And well, there were over 2,000 of us that actually got into the program.
Oh, wow. Boy, so you were one of the few. You know, that was one of the few, the proud. That was y'all.
Yes. And they, you know, we proved that the crab in the barrel didn't apply to the airmen or many of the guys who were in the military in World War II, because they all reached back and pulled us up to them.
Yes, and y'all also proved that y'all weren't ignorant, that y'all were able to learn, and that y'all
able,
could fly planes.
Right. And I still have very proud memories of the guys. Now, many of them have passed. Bill Johnson out of New York, he was in our class. Uh-huh. He passed. Francis Ashwood, who was my roommate, passed. Miles Washington. I met Miles Washington in Keyserfield, Mississippi, and we were friends from 1944 until he passed just a few years ago. We were they were like brothers, big brothers to me.
Yes, wow. That's really something. Now, what was the training like? Did you learn how to do the mechanics
I'm
of
laughing.
The plane and everything as well?
Yeah, the training was not changed for us. And I could fly an airplane and couldn't drive a car.
Have you learned how to drive yet?
Yeah, I did that. Yeah, I had to do that so I could pick up Kamoa.
Yeah, well, that was
I did that. I was 22 years old when I got my driver's license. I got discharged at 19. I was 19, so that shows you I could fly an airplane a couple of years before I could drive a car.
So, look, you got me beat. I didn't get my license until I was 34.
Wow. Well, and Camilla, my wife, she didn't trick me. She surprised me. She got her license right after we got married. And,
good.
I was shy. She went. Because I told her, we used to travel a lot. And as a result of that, the three of us, out in the road, and if I was the only driver, anything happened, you know, they were out of what's name. So anyway, she decided, okay, I'll get my driver's license. Doggone if she didn't do it on the first try.
Oh, well, that was good.
Yeah.
That was real good.
Yeah.
So she had to do the parallel parking and everything?
What's that?
She had to do the parallel parking?
Yes, everything. She did all of that stuff. The first
See,
time.
That's good.
And
that's
that was,
good.
You know,
I passed on my first time, but look how old I was.
Yeah. And the thing was, you know, a lot of people don't know. It's not easy driving an automobile. And particularly when we were doing it back then, you had we didn't have automatic transmissions. And we had automatic, but most of us didn't have them in the cars.
Yeah, and
back
no power steering.
Yeah. Oh, my, that power steering, that was a humdinger. Like you said, that parallel parking. Man, oh, man.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that without power steering. That was really...
Yeah.
I had a friend that your share car didn't have power steering, and we see what you do. It was truly, truly a job. But now flying planes is nothing like driving a car.
No, no. It's totally different. And I hate to admit this, but I haven't flown a plane since 1946.
Well, you did it when
in
it 19... mattered.
Huh? Well.
You did it when it mattered.
The thing is, when I came out to service, I had flown the PT-13D, which is a open cockpit biplane with two wings.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I learned in. And that was 220 horsepower.
Wow.
The last airplane I flew was 650 horsepower, was the AT-6. And that was an advanced trainer that we were one of the first classes to fly that plane in basic flying. See, there are four phases. There were four phases to become an Army air pilot. There was pre-flight, which was all ground school. Then there was primary, where you learn to fly. And we did that at Moton Field over at the Tuskegee Institute then. The PT-13D, I had 60-some hours in that. Half of that is solo.
Yes.
I have 70 hours in the AT-6. Half of that is solo. And so those are the two planes that I flew. And when I came out to service, a friend of mine who was a Tuskegee Airman, Herb Jones, took me down to an airport in Maryland, Crooms Field, put me in a kite with a Volkswagen engine, and we took off.
Oh, wow.
It was an airplane. It was an airplane, but it didn't have any power. I was climbing, after we took off, I was climbing, and Herb said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going up so I can do some acrobatics." He said, "You don't have time." I got up to 1,500 feet, and I did a couple of crazy eights, what they call crazy eights, and had to land the airplane. I was not very happy with the trip, and primarily because I had never flown an airplane without a parachute on. This was the first time I'd ever done that, and I've not flown an airplane until just a couple of summers ago. The president of our East Coast chapter had a meeting at the Baltimore-Washington airport, and he had us put us in planes and let us go up in the air.
Oh, wow. So the ask now, do you miss it? Would you do it again?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And like I said, I couldn't afford $50 an hour in 1946. And that's what it would have cost me to fly the planes that I flew because of the power and stuff. 1946, I could not have done that. But I went to Howard. With the help of my wife, I got a Bachelor of Science in Civil Engineer. And I went to the opposite of flying. I helped build the metro system in Washington, D.C.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know that they appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Like I tell you, God has blessed me. The people that I've met coming up were people who did not ignore me. They put their hands down and pulled me up with them. And
that was good. Like that's always... Yes.
Right. I can't name them all, but they're people that I will always remember. God knows I remember.
Yes. And that's good. It's always important, you know, the ones that uplift and encourage, because there are times need encouragement.
Right. One of the things that I think God has made a mistake in this situation. I've never seen Kim Weston, but I feel like I've known her all my life.
Yeah, Miss Kim makes you feel that way.
Thank you, Kim.
She truly does. She makes you feel that way. She makes you feel like you're a part of the family, you know, like you belong
to her.
Yeah, because I know she does that with me. But I just love her.
Okay, God knows what he's doing.
Yes, he does.
He knows what he's doing. Yes, indeed.
Yes, he most definitely does. And I just love her. And I know that, you know, I can feel her love.
Right.
I truly can.
Right.
Yes, she means a lot to me. And
she
your
says
brother
she's
means
coming
a
to
lot
Washington,
to me, brother Ray.
So I will get to see her. So.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, and I know she's looking forward to it. And I told her that I'm going to try to come so I can, and I hope Brother Ray will be there.
Oh,
and Miss Kim, you're
going
to be in Washington, right, Miss Kim?
Do you all know that I just got back on the air?
Yes, I know.
Okay.
I know, I called you twice.
Let my phone say, missed everything, huh?
Welcome to the club.
Thank you. But I bet you didn't tell him about that. I bet you didn't tell him about that, the letter that you got when you first got there.
Did I?
Yes. You remember the letter that you told me about?
Walter. Yeah. Uh-huh. My brother Walter was 12 years old when I was in the service. And he wrote me a letter. And I'm in the army with a bunch of men, you know. And he said, when I grow up, I want to be just like you. Scared the hell out of me, very frankly. Because I had no idea that my four brothers were watching everything I did. And whatever I did was correct. And which meant that when he wrote that letter, I think that was one of the things that changed me to understand what God meant for me, to not show them the wrong way, but do it the best I can the right way. And that's what I've done all my life. And I thank Walter, I thank Kenneth, I thank Raymond, and I thank Gerald for what they did to their big brother by looking up to him.
And I mean, look at the impact that you made on him. I mean, you had a brother, you know, your brother Walter, who became a congressman for D.C.
Right.
And Brother Ray, who you inspired to become an activist, you know, fighting for people's rights. And still,
well, you know, the old phrase, all y'all look alike.
Yes.
Well, Walter had me to breakfast with one of the meetings he is in. And I was standing over on the side, and this congressman walked up to me. Well, what am I supposed to do when I vote for someone? So I said, excuse me. I said, there's Walter over there. but that was something I cherished it because the respect they showed to my brother.
Yes.
You know, people don't know, if you don't meet other folk who don't know you and they show you respect, you ought to cherish that. Moment. Because it's like, you know, now you get these calls, William. And I got one just this afternoon. William, I said, who is this? And he explained who he was. I said, you don't know me. You should at least give me a title when you call me or anyone else. And then I hung up.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, well, I don't blame you. Because they do. I get calls with Antoinette. And I'm like, who is this? You know, especially when some of them are, you know, younger than my youngest child.
Right. And, you know, my wife and I were in Jamaica in a restaurant, and this lady walked up to me, William. And my wife said, how do you know her? I said, we were in junior high school together. And she lived across from the junior high school. And that's, of course, when you're in school, that's, you know, your first name is what, William, every time they called on me. They didn't call me Billy. They called me William.
Yeah, well, I think I told you my name was William.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's apparently, I saw on television a couple of days, that's the top male name that people like, it was William. So I didn't know that.
Yeah.
My mother and father were way beyond their time.
Yes, they were.
I tell everyone, my mother had a PhD in raising children.
Oh, well, that was good.
Yeah.
I mean, but she did a fine job. I mean, all of y'all are great. You know, y'all are great men.
And she was just a high school graduate. She never went to college.
And that's good.
And
that's
she just,
good. Well, she probably got it from her mother. And
right. The family thing. And that's one of the things my brother Raymond really sticks out in that area, because he complains that we don't meet like we used to meet with my mother. Anybody's birthday in the family was at the house where she lived. We had a birthday party that day or night. We went to church right around the corner where Walter was the pastor. And so we don't do that now, and we can't, because we're all over the place.
And that makes a difference. Everybody has their own lives. They have their own family.
Absolutely, you know.
It gets hard.
Yeah.
It does get hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you wanted to ask me something. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to think of what it was. Okay, I know. Now,
you're like
me.
Don't worry about it. It'll come up. Tomorrow you'll say, I should have asked him this. And I will say tomorrow, I should have answered this way.
Yes. You're right. Now, Miss Kim wants to do International Tuskegee Airmen Day. What would that mean for you and the other Tuskegee Airmen to be recognized internationally?
Well, that would just be another star in the crown of those guys that did what they did. My class used to kid about it. We would say that the war ended because of us. They heard we were coming and quit. But that wasn't acceptable.
Yeah, I believe that.
We were kidding, because, like I said, our instructors all came back, and I met quite a few of them because I would go to the conventions. We have a convention every August. Just since this COVID has come along, we held virtual conventions, but otherwise we would go and would meet people that we didn't know. We'll give you an example of what happens. We had a convention. This was before the COVID in Las Vegas. And General Harris had just gotten her first star, but she refused to get the star until the Tuskegee Airmen meeting in August. Because her father was in the Air Force. And is now a three-star. She was one-star general then. She is now a three-star general. And I've had the great fortune of being there when she got the star. General McGee gave her a third one. So it's those are the kind of things that make you feel proud that you even knew these guys.
Yeah.
More or less being one of them.
Yes. Yes, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Wow.
She refused to get her, they usually get their promotions in April, I think it was. And she didn't want it to receive her star until Tuskegee Airmen could put it on her in August. And those are the kind of things. Stacey Harris is her name. She's a lieutenant general. She might be more now, but those are the kind of things that happen.
Yeah, see, that was good. That was really good. You know, I mean, and just, you know, her faith in the Tuskegee Airmen that she wanted to wait until they were able to do it. That, you
right.
know, she wasn't willing to sell them for anyone else.
Right. Exactly.
Now, what were the women's roles in the Tuskegee Airmen?
Oh, well, they, you know, that's something else. They were nurses,
mm-hmm.
secretaries. None of them were flyers. None of them flew airplanes. But they made sure that the parachutes were right and the office ran right. So there were 15,000 of them as well as the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes. Oh, wow.
One of them, Lieutenant Colin, lives in New York, but she's a member of the East Coast chapter of Tuskegee Airmen. Uh-huh. She must be over 100 years old.
Wow.
But she's one of them living.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson, he'll be 100, I think on the 28th of this
month. I met him when he came to Washington for the opening of the museum. That was the first time I met him. He's quite a story teller because he uses art to do it as well as speaking. And like I said, I'm just so God just made it possible for me to shake hands with guys like that. And he probably doesn't remember me. I was a little guy in the wheelchair when Colin Powell shook our hand.
Sure, he remembers me. How can he forget me?
How could I forget him?
Right. Well, how can
those guys
forget him?
Right.
He knew that y'all were coming in next if, you know, had they not got scared of y'all coming.
Right.
That they had to end the war.
Yeah, you were in Detroit, right?
No, I'm in Delaware.
I'm in Detroit.
Oh, okay. The reason I said that, the captain of my class was William T. Patrick, Jr. He was the first black councilman in Detroit. And those are the kind of guys that I had an opportunity to touch and understand. And William T. Patrick, he and I had the same initials. William T., he used to call me.
So both of y'all were there.
Yeah.
Well, you said Wim was a popular name back. It's still popular. It's still a popular name. It's a lot of Williams.
Well, yeah, if Kim can hear me, I want to thank her for she's been a special person to me. Like I said, I haven't seen her in person. I'm looking forward to just touching her, just putting my hand on her.
God be the glory.
Thank you.
Oh,
God be the glory.
Yes.
But I'm going to tell you something. You know, some of the ministers that I've been listening to, they say that they got off track talking about 70 years. You know, Mm-hmm. We're really supposed, we're promised in this age 120 years, and that's what I'm shooting for.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in your right mind, so I don't know what your problem would be.
Okay. Well, I promised they had a birthday parade for me on my 95th birthday in front of my house. And I promised, one of my nieces told me just last night, you promised you'd be here for 102. So
okay.
I'm trying, but that's,
yeah,
that's
but
you know, I got a date, but I don't know it. Only God knows it. And whenever he calls, I've got to go.
And all we need to do is do our best until that time. You know?
Right.
That's one of the things that, that's one of the things that's bothering me is that we don't have the examples. If we have them, they're not.
We have them, but nobody advertises them the way they should. Because, like I said, Tuskegee Airmen get a lot of credit, but there were other military people that did. Like I had a guy was in high school with, lived up the street from me. He was a Marine in World War II, which was just unbelievable when you look at back at the history. And there, he was not just the one. There were many that, you know, the, and they like the artillery guys, the guys that were in the tanks and stuff. They did as much as anybody did to make sure that our democracy did not die to the Nazis. So I'm just proud to be a part of it, and proud to know that there are people who still care about.
Well, you know, that's a part, excuse me, but that's a part of our problem because we're not telling our own story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to hear you, so I'm not going to go into my whole thing with my little airplane with the red tail.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that another time. But see, what I'm saying is the reason that you didn't get was you were 17 years old when you tried to get in there.
Yeah, I was 17 years old when they accepted me in the Army Air Corps Reserves. When I turned 18, they put me in the Army. And the thing is, see, I had interest in flying when I was young, around 12, I think, because I read this book about this Harlan Eagle, Lord Hubert Fauntleroy, and he became the black pilot that went overseas and fought for Ethiopia against the Italians. And I later learned he was a jive turkey, but at least he did that, and he inspired me to want to fly.
Yeah, well, that was good. And I'm glad he did. It's something how people touch our lives in ways that we never would have thought of.
Right.
Now,
I mentioned this guy's name, Herb Jones.
Yes.
He was involved with Coffey, up in a guy named Coffey that had a school teaching blacks to fly back then, back before the World War II. Yeah, so there's a great history with people who you never hear about, who did went before I ever got a chance to fly an airplane. And like the chief, well, you heard here about Chief Anderson because he took Mrs. Roosevelt up. And when she got down on the ground, she said, I was told you couldn't fly.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did the Tuskegee Airmen, if I understand it correctly, it's because of y'all that they had the Air Force.
Well, yeah, and Truman, because of what we did, when I say we, I'm talking about the Tuscanee Airmen who fought in World War II, because of their record, that's when Harry Truman not only formed the Air Force, he took it out of the Army's hand and formed the Air Force, he also integrated the military.
Yeah.
So that, you know, the Navy and the Marines and everybody else, you were a Marine, didn't care what color you were. You were a soldier because you were a soldier. And that Harry Truman gets the credit for that.
Yeah. But what it was because of the work that the Tuskegee Airmen did that he had to us now that, you know, opened the way.
Right. But I hesitate to say that we did it alone. As I said, there were so many of my friends who were not Tuskegee Airmen, but soldiers in the military, in the Navy, in places like that, that did yeoman job. There's a lady, a European, who wrote a book about blacks in the military, and she dedicates one chapter, I think, to the Tuskegee Airmen. But her whole book is about what blacks did during World War II. And of course, that I'm sure that has some influence on Harry Truman, because he was one of the people who, though he was from a segregated state, he greeted some black pilots who flew from somewhere out west to Washington, D.C. And this is before they were Tuskegee Airmen.
Well, you know, it's a shame that the credit that black people should have gotten and that they didn't get in all things, not just in flying, but, you know, just in
and
all
they're
things.
Still
you know,
doing
from
it.
Right, yes, that's still that way. Now, you guys spoke how your brother your father, excuse me, worked in the patent office, and I'm sure that there were many patents that, you know, that he didn't know that this was a patent that originally a black man had created, but it was stolen from him.
Well, as I told you, my father worked in the patent office 45 years, and he trained all of his supervisors. They came in. He trained them, and then they were put above him.
Yeah. At least he didn't get kicked out of his job from, you know, training someone, and then, you know, you lose your job after you train them.
Yeah, my mother is still mad with me in heaven, because when my father retired, we were all there, and I made a comment that it's a shame that my father worked 45 years in the patent office, and I make more money than he did.
Because
I was hired as an engineer, which was a different thing for federal. The salaries were different. And here I am, little, coming in the 60s, in the 61, 61 or 62, I think it was, my father retired.
What? Well, pay raises and everything else, you know, times have changed.
Right, right. Yeah, I was telling somebody when I first went to work at the patent office in 1942, We couldn't even meet in the cafeteria. And that's a federal building. We had to had to have a special room for us to eat in. And everybody else, no matter what they were, as long as they weren't a Negro, could eat there. If they were a Negro, you had to go to that small room that they had for us. Well, I hope I've answered your questions. If I haven't, I'm sorry.
No, you did wonderfully. You did wonderful, Brother Billy. You truly did.
Okay.
I'm grateful for you, and I'm grateful for the work that you did do.
And Kim, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, darling. You know what? I wanted you to just express yourself. You know what I'm saying? And I understand that when you got there at 17, with the research that I've been doing, actually when they opened it up for you, or somebody 17 black that could get you.
Well, you know, my mother, I think she signed for me because she didn't think I could pass the test. Because I hadn't finished high school. And all of my classmates, most of them had a year in college. I couldn't spell algebra.
Yeah.
But I had to do algebra to fly. And they helped me. Like I said, Francis Ashford had finished a year at the University of Minnesota. And he was one of the main guys that helped me.
Yeah, well, Brother Ray, we're going to work on getting International Tuskegee Airmen Day.
Right, commemorative day for Tuskegee Airmen.
Let me say
the fourth Thursday of every March from now on in the District of Columbia, Virginia.
No, it should be national.
It's going to make it international.
The reason I'm talking about an international thing is because from what I've seen, the red-tailed angels changed the whole thing.
Now, when the red-tailed angels don't have anything to do. They are not affiliated with the Tuskegee Airmen. That's a separate organization.
Okay, but the red-tailed angels are not Tuskegee Airmen,
they have Tuskegee Airmen. Just General McGee was a part of it, but they are not a part of the Tuskegee Airmen Incorporated, the national organization.
Well, most of them are dead anyway, and that was before you.
Yeah.
Well, see, what I'm saying is, from what I saw, they said that they were losing 600 bombers a day.
Mm-hmm.
And each bomber had 10 to 15 people on it, right?
People on it, right.
So we're talking about, and you know how much is 15 times 600?
Right.
15 times 600?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they have a parade in Washington, D.C. every year, and most of our chapter, we participate, and it's downtown on the mall, and I was sitting there waiting to, you know, get on our, what's the name, and this guy says, a gentleman over here wants to talk to you. Can you go and talk? So I went over. It was a white guy. And he said, I just want to thank you, man, for getting me home. He was a bomber, a B-24 bomber pilot. And I had to tell him, I said, well, I didn't do that. I said, my instructor may have been one of those that got you home. But I was still in training when the war ended. But the man was in tears. Thanking me for the Tuskegee Airmen getting him home. And So you, that just shows you how proficient our guys were. They were. It's not true that they didn't lose the plane, but they lost fewer than any
any other group. But my, when I'm looking at though, from the first day that they started escorting the bombers. As a matter of fact, the bombers are the ones that called them angels. And they had already
Yeah, that's why General Davis had on his plane by request.
Because the bombers were
requesting names. Yeah, send them guys with the red tails. And then I understand one of them landed at our field and found out they were Negroes. And one of them wrote home, "I'm sleeping with niggas."
Oh, my.
Yeah. But they, you know, they also complimented.
Well, that's good. But it had to have been, in my opinion, for me, it had to have been hard dealing with all that racism, especially when, you know, you were training to go in to help them.
Right.
So how was that? I mean, I know you didn't do it, but I know you were training for it. So still with everything that you were being trained to do, to be called out of your name had to really been a hard thing to
I can't imagine some of the stuff. For example, we were in Tuskegee, Alabama.
Yeah.
And some of the guys who became officers and went in town, and people wouldn't exercise the what you honor your military people for, especially, you know, since they were black.
And, yeah.
You know, one thing happened to me, and it happened to several. The football team from Tuskegee Army Airfield played the football team from Georgia, the Army's in Columbus, Georgia. And we all got on trucks and rode, it's about 50 miles away. We all go and went to the game. After the game, one of the soldiers from that army, the black soldiers from that army base, was out trying to help direct the traffic, and the local policeman shot and killed him.
Oh, no.
And they rushed us on our trucks and rushed us out of there. And on the way home, and I'm going to tell this story because the guy, Ira O'Neill, was physical therapy guy for all of us. And he was a lieutenant and a great football player, big man, was on the truck with me, and he was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Ira, I said, Ira, if I live to be 100, I will always respect you. And sure enough, we became great friends. And I used to have lunch with him at Ben's Chili Bowl. Ira was an idol to me, just because of what he was doing on that truck with us riding back. Because there wasn't anything we could do. We didn't have any arms or anything. We just went to see a football game.
Boy, now when you were training, were you allowed to train with weapons? Like the white officers were?
I could. The only one I had trouble with was the .45. As an officer, you usually had a .45. I could shoot the carbine. And see, coming from the District of Columbia, we had our high schools. We had 1903 arms that we practiced with. So I was familiar with all of that before I went in the service. When they introduced that 45, the pistol, 45 pistol, yeah. automatic pistol, that sucker beat me to death. Because it was so powerful in its rebound.
Okay, so the new things that they have out now, now I may say it wrong, somebody may have to help me. AR something?
Yeah. See, only thing we knew were we had carbines, what they call carbines back then. And that was like it was the ARP of this state, of this time. The ARP came out after World War II.
Oh, okay. Now, you know, they said that I've heard different people say that. Forgive me for not looking it up and checking for myself. But because of the lead pistols, that it would make people have mental problems and health problems.
I don't have any information in my mind about that.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I read, these people coming back home from overseas, from Cuba and from other areas that have problems that they can't determine what it is and stuff. So I don't know what it is, except that I read about it in the newspaper.
Yeah, I think that's the way we're all getting it. But, you know, I mean, I just heard, you know, with just recent things that, you know, just with the lead, you know, and they were talking about police officers and things like that, you know,
right.
And how they're very aggressive, you know, and they said they contributed to the lead.
Right.
That comes from the firearms.
Yeah.
And so I don't know because I don't use firearms, but.
Like I said, all I know is what they put in the newspapers. And
yeah.
That's it. I know that there's a problem. Because even the children of the people who live in these areas where this whatever it is happening, they are having problems, children. So, it's something.
Now, I'm going to ask your opinion, just your opinion. And if you choose to answer it, with, you know, going to today with what's going on with Russia and, oh, Lord, forgive me, the country went right out of my head. But the problems that they're having with the war, Ukraine.
Hmm.
How do you feel about that?
Well, my personal opinion doesn't have the knowledge of what's going on except for what they put in the newspapers and on television. And I think this guy, Putin, is crazy.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. Now,
yeah.
My opinion is worth about 2 cents, I think, as far as international stuff that's going on, because I'm more concerned about me and what's going on around my family and me.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can say is that if he's doing what the newspaper says he's doing, there's going to be a World War III. But he's going to be surprised how many people, nations, are going to be against Russia and what they're doing.
Yes, I agree with that.
But I have no knowledge of anything that's going on except, like I said, like all of us who read the newspapers and see the television.
Yeah.
But with these folks coming home from even before the Russian thing started, there were people they couldn't understand things were happening to them. And one of the places that they, they've accused of doing whatever it is they're doing is Cuba. So,
yeah.
And that's just, they just can swim over here and do us some harm.
Yeah, that is true. Because Cuba is very close to Florida. Now, I was always told that Russia has a bomb that's, you know, that can hit us, and we have one that can hit them. But if one triggers then the other one will automatically go off. So it's kind of hard to see a war between the United States and Russia because it'll knock out both countries.
Not only countries, the world.
Oh, okay. Wow. And Brother Billy, are we keeping you? You need to rest.
I do need to rest, but I'll stay as long as. Yeah, well.
I don't want to tire you. I don't want to overtire you.
You know, I'm sitting on the edge of my bed. I'll just fall down when I hang up.
No, well, I don't want you to fall down. No, you just let me know when you're ready to go, and we'll let you go. I don't want to keep you and, you know, and prevent you from getting your rest. I don't want to do
okay,
that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for having me and letting me express myself as far as Tuskegee Airmen are concerned. And other things, but, you know, we each have, I tell everybody, every Tuskegee Airman, whether he was a pilot or whatever, he has a story about Lena Horn. Lena Horn was our pinup girl. And what I liked about Lena Horn is when she came to the base, then Tuskegee, she went around and saw all of the soldiers that were there. Too many of the entertainers that came, they entertained us, went to the officers' club, and that's the last she saw them. But not Lena Horn. She was all over. So I'll bet that every Tuskegee Airman has a story about how they met or did something with Lena Horn. And like I said,
can you tell a story? Do you have one about her?
Yeah, I was on duty. This was before I went into training. One of my jobs as a pre-aviation cadet was to assign airplanes and to instructors and students. And I was on duty one night when Lena Horn came to the ready room where I was. And she needed a restroom. Well, they didn't have men's and women's back then, you know, for the military. So I had to stand guard while she went to the bathroom. I was in a pair of fatigues. I'm 5'4" and my fatigues would fit a guy 6 feet tall.
I look like
a real sad sack. So that's my story. I guarded the bathroom for Lena Horn, and I looked like sad sack number one.
But she knew that wasn't your fault.
She was a very gracious lady. My wife and I went to New York to see her. In her program that she had on Broadway. My wife said, why don't you tell her to stop? I said, I'm not going to embarrass that lady and tell her I watched the door while she went to the bathroom.
I just loved.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
She was our Betty Grable. I think Betty Grable was the white pinup girl. And
Lena
Horn was our pinup. Well, thank you guys for having me. And Kim, thank you. I don't get a chance to talk to people I don't know and let them know about what God has done with me. And I hope they understand. Everything I say, or have done is because of what God has done with me, not what I did. Because without him, I could not have done anything that I've done that has contributed to our society. Thank you, and I love you guys.
Well, just before you
thank
go.
Thank you, Brother Billy. Go ahead, Ms. Campbell.
Just before you go, I'd like to say, happy birthday to them. Happy birthday, happy birthday to you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Happy
thank
birthday,
you.
Brother Billy.
Thank you, thank you. And if Raymond can hear me, I'm so happy to hear his music on the beginning of the program. Love you.
Yeah.
Love you too, darling.
We
God
love
bless
you too. We
you
love
too.
Your brother.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Have a good evening.
Thank
wow,
you, Antoinette.
Oh, thank you.
We got to do this again.
Yes, I'm sorry, y'all. We weren't taking calls this evening. We were just, you know, letting the stories be told, and we want to encourage everyone to push for International Tuskegee Airmen Day and also push for a national one, you know, pushing your state where you are so that it will be a national Tuskegee Airmen Day. The fourth, each of
fourth
the fourth
Thursday in March.
In March. So we want to push for that as well in our states because I know it's not here in Delaware. So, you know, your
that
state
was
where
yesterday.
You, yes, that was yesterday. So we want to push for that. And also keep in mind that Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson's birthday is the 28th, and he will be 100. So he is one of the daughters, one of the original Tuskegee Airmen. So we don't want to forget them. You know, forget him. You know, he's going to be 100 years old. So, Ms. Campbell, I'm going to play a song for everyone. Y'all listen to this. This is Ms. Kim.
Born free, as free as the wind blows, as free as the grass grows, born free to follow your heart. Oh, live free, and beauty surrounds the world still astounds you each time you look at a star. Just stay free where no walls divide you. You're free as the roaring tide and they will need you home. You're born free and life is worth living, but only worth living. No walls divide you. You're free.
on, Miss Kim. Because of the Tuskegee Airmen, we can say that we're born free in the United States. We're not speaking German. So we thank you for that.
Let me tell you this here. If they hadn't stepped in there, that's what everybody be speaking.
Yes. And it wouldn't have been because that's what we chose to do. That we chose to learn German. It would be because that would just be the language of the land.
Well, I thank you, darling. I want to talk to the family about it. I'm grateful you've got these doors. Thank you so much. Love you.
Miss Kim, you're not coming in clear.
But that's all the more reason I'm saying God bless. God be the Lord. Thank you very much. Love you, family.
I love you too, Miss Kim. Okay, y'all, thank you for coming. I truly hope that you found this session informative. And don't forget Dry Bones on Sunday for the Helios Filios at 10 a.m. Okay, thank you, and good night.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, walk this lovely land with me. Go ahead.